this is your Polycast for Tuesday, December 13th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, lots of interest in legislative pay and moving ahead with the soccer stadium. The agency that runs U.S. Bank Stadium says it's going to ban stadium officials and family members as guests in its two private suites. The Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority announced the new policy yesterday after weeks of criticism and accusations of favoritism for allowing non-paying and non-business-related guests in the suites. Authority Chair Michelle Kelm-Helgen says the Metrodome's policy allowed friends and family in, but that she appreciates expectations have changed.
The new suite policy will be the tightest in Minnesota and, to our knowledge, the nation. And we maybe didn't go far enough in the beginning, and now we will.
The agency also released lists of most of the people that have been invited into the Stadium Authority suites since the $1.1 billion stadium opened in August. Besides football, it has hosted soccer matches and concerts, among other activities. Republican and DFL lawmakers plan to introduce legislation next month to stop the Minnesota Department of Public Safety from tracking the locations of motorists who use ignition interlock devices. The department runs the program that measures the blood alcohol levels of drunk driving offenders when they get behind the wheel, but the devices also have the capability to collect GPS data. Republican Representative Peggy Scott of Andover said that tougher standards are needed to protect privacy.
The purpose of the Ignition Interlock program is to not allow people to drive after they've been drinking, plain and simple. To now require Ignition Interlock devices to be equipped with GPS or any other technology that can track the program participants' whereabouts is overreach and may indeed be unconstitutional.
Scott chairs the House Civil Law and Data Practices Committee and plans to hold a hearing on the issue at the start of the 2017 session. Looks like a lot of Minnesotans want a say in how much state legislators get paid. 270 people have applied to serve on a new council that will set legislative pay thanks to a constitutional amendment approved this fall by voters. The deadline to apply has now passed, and we'll know soon who ends up on the panel. Brian Baxt has more.
They come from all walks of life. There's a former police chief and a furniture store owner. There are entrepreneurs, union leaders, college professors, and more. Only 16 of the applicants will be chosen to be inaugural members of the Legislative Salary Council. Setting pay had previously been up to the legislature, but lawmakers have been reluctant to touch the topic since pay last increased in 1999.
I can see why they handed it off.
That's David Metzen, one of the applicants, and we'll get back to him in a bit. The council must be appointed by January 2nd and will convene its first meeting later that month. By March, the panel must decide if the $31,000 annual salary for 201 legislators stays put, goes up, or declines. DFL Governor Mark Dayton will choose half the members, and Supreme Court Chief Justice Lori Gilday will pick the rest. By law, each must choose one person from each congressional district. Half the seats will go to Republicans and half to Democrats. Dayton supports raising lawmaker salaries, but he says he won't make that a precondition of his selections.
It's new territory, but, you know, we'll proceed. And I want a fair-minded commission, people who are responsible and people, you know, good judgment, and then they'll make their own decisions.
Angela Sedlacek says she found the ballot question that led to the council to be, quote, cunningly worded. She says she applied to be on the panel because she'll be keeping tabs on it anyway.
Facetiously, I could say, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. So since it was voted for and they're going ahead with this this commission, I thought, you know, it would be interesting to be on that.
Sedlacek said she will go into the role willing to listen to arguments for and against a raise. She chairs a local Republican Party unit in Lakeville, is raising four sons that she homeschools, and considers herself a professional volunteer. David Zeller also applied for one of the spots designated for a Republican. He's a professor of accounting and finance at the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. As a CPA who has worked in business, Zeller says he could bring a valuable perspective to the council.
I guess I understand that it certainly is a political decision and that it's hard for the politicians who are in office to make that choice. And I suppose perhaps that's the case. Perhaps it will be used as cover. But I guess the point that I'm thinking of is that people got to get paid reasonably. And if this is the best way to do that, I guess so be it.
Brian Litze is a Democrat and says he hopes the council can wall itself off from the politics swirling around the pay issue. He's a retired suburban police chief and an ex-city council member.
Yeah, it was always difficult when the issue of, you know, compensation came up because, you know, people somewhat have a negative view of that anyway. And then, you know, it's like, well, you're voting yourself a raise. That doesn't seem fair.
He knows whatever decision gets made will be second-guessed. Supporters of the new pay process tried to put some distance between the decision-makers and those with a strong Capitol presence. That's why sitting and former lawmakers, their spouses, lobbyists, judges, and legislative staff can't be on it. That said, some of the applicants are people who ran for the legislature but lost. It also brings us back to David Metzen. If his name sounds familiar, it's because he's a former suburban school superintendent and a past University of Minnesota regent. And his brother was Jim Metzen, a longtime DFL legislator who died in office this year.
I think I have a good understanding what it takes to be a good legislator. So if the fact that my brother was a legislator disqualifies me, so be it. I'm volunteering my time, and if they want me, that's fine. If not, that's okay, too.
Metzen said he wouldn't have applied if his brother were still in the state Senate. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota United owner Bill McGuire says preliminary work on the team's new soccer stadium is underway. At a groundbreaking ceremony yesterday in St. Paul, McGuire said utility crews started moving electrical lines at the site 3 weeks ago, and major construction will begin in the spring. But developers still don't have full control of the site, and they're awaiting a key property tax break from the state amid a shift in legislative power. Matt Sepik has the story.
More than a year ago, St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman and Minnesota United owner Bill McGuire announced the team's stadium would be built largely on the publicly owned site of an old bus garage near Snelling Avenue and I-94. Yesterday, with the temperature hovering around 7 degrees, the two joined other team officials and a half dozen school children to toss shovelfuls of ceremonial dirt out of a wooden box.
One, two, three.
All right. McGuire told reporters that the 20,000-seat, $150 million venue is still on track to open in 2018, though he still wouldn't say exactly when. And even with preliminary construction already underway, McGuire still does not have the go-ahead to build on the entire site. That's because a Rainbow grocery store sits within the stadium's proposed footprint, and McGuire has yet to finalize a deal with property owner RK Midway. From the beginning, renderings of the stadium showed it oriented north to south. Asked if he'd rotate the footprint 90 degrees to avoid the neighboring grocery store, McGuire said he's open to the idea.
We've looked at a number of options, and, you know, that's certainly a possibility. That's not preferred.
And there's another hang-up. McGuire is counting on a property tax exemption from the state. Lawmakers approved the break early this year as part of a bipartisan tax package, but Governor Mark Dayton declined to sign the bill because of an unrelated $101 million error involving bingo halls. Nevertheless, McGuire says he's confident legislators will come through next year.
It was very strong bipartisan support, and it's a logical step. It's just really the continuation of the current status of the site. It's nothing new. So, you know, we take them on good faith, and you know, if we want this to get done and completed and be up and going, we need to move forward, and we're moving forward.
But since lawmakers struck that deal, things have changed at the Minnesota legislature. Republicans strengthened their majority in the House and narrowly took control of the Senate. Republican Roger Chamberlain of Lino Lakes will chair the Senate's powerful tax committee when lawmakers reconvene January 3rd. Chamberlain says the soccer stadium deal wasn't a major point of controversy in the last session, but at the same time, he would not guarantee that it'll stay in next year's tax legislation.
2017 is going to be a 2017 tax bill. It won't be 2016, but there will be some good things that are carried forward, obviously, from 2016 into the new tax bill. And we'll set our priorities. We want to avoid any problems that we can avoid.
Bill McGuire wouldn't say much about the politics of the tax break, but he did reveal some new design elements. The canopy will cover a larger portion of the seating area, and the entire building will be lowered 4 feet, eliminating the need for steps at the entrance. As for property under and around the mostly privately funded development, the city of St. Paul is kicking in about $18 million in improvements to sewers, sidewalks, streets, and more. Former St. Paul School Board member and current mayoral candidate Tom Goldstein has long opposed the project. He points out that the city council recently approved a nearly 8% increase in the maximum property tax levy. Goldstein says the soccer stadium, the sixth professional sports venue in the Twin Cities, is a prime example of misplaced priorities.
If we don't have the money for basic city services, we don't have the money to do infrastructure about a soccer stadium. But somehow, we always find the money for these big-ticket projects that are primarily the beneficiary of millionaire and billionaire team owners.
Even with uncertainties about building its stadium, Minnesota United is moving forward with building up its roster of players with this afternoon's Major League Soccer expansion draft. The team will play at the University of Minnesota's TCF Bank Stadium next year and in 2018. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.